You're listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Tonight, Abby, we're going to be talking about substance abuse, addiction, and recovery in the Native American community. This is the first segment in our new ongoing series on how addiction affects specific communities across the country and how those communities find treatment and recovery.
So, John, how are you?
I'm doing well,
Abby. I was
Abby.
Laughing because you just told everybody not to laugh just as soon as I came on.
That's my little trick.
So some of the statistics are that the show came about because we were really interested in talking to our guests, because the statistics are really, really tough. About 18% of Native Americans or Alaskan Natives are declared as in need of substance abuse treatment, which is about twice as much as the average population. And the statistics are just kind of overwhelming. And there's lots of myths out there as to why this is, you know, and there's a lot of stereotypes about it. And we wanted to really hear the experience and hear the truth and kind of come down to it. The other statistic that kind of got me is it's the abuse rate is high. The use rate of drugs and alcohol is lower. So it's that people it's a group of people that, for whatever reason, and we're going to learn out about why tonight, get in trouble with drugs and alcohol. And the thing, having been in the field forever, this is a group of people that treatment works for, just like every other group
everybody,
of people.
Everybody else.
But there's a lot of unique approaches to treatment, and we're going to hear about that, too.
I know nothing about this. I'm going to say that. Well, why is that different from anything else in my life? Well, but I really don't know much about this, so I'm excited to learn more about this, and we have some great guests tonight.
Yeah, we have David Patterson. Hi, David. How are you? He's an assistant professor at the Brown School of Social Work at Washington University and has over 15 years of experience in providing clinical addiction-related services. He's also currently an associate researcher with the University of Buffalo's Research Institute on Addictions and the Buffalo Center for Social Research.
And in the studio, we have Lucina Anko. She's the site manager at Native American Lifelines Boston, and she received her Master of Social Work degree from the Boston College Graduate School of Social Work. She is a member of the Shinnecock Indian Nation and affiliated with the Kiowa tribe of Oklahoma. Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, Kiowa.
Kiowa, I'm sorry. Okay. Welcome to the show, Lucina. And also in the studio with us is Janelle Pukawachit. She's the outreach coordinator at Native American Lifelines Boston. She serves on the board of directors for Archdale Community Center of Boston and is a member of the Mi'kmaq First Nations and Comanche Nation of Oklahoma.
So I'd like to hear from our guests, and if you are comfortable telling us first, David, so what is going on? What is it that you see, and you know, are the statistics right or wrong?
Well, yeah, I think they're right. And I think whenever you look at Native American statistics, you have to put things in context. And I think first of all, thanks for having me on.
thanks
for being on.
So let me say up front, I'm not the expert of all things Native American and all those sort of things. I don't even know what expert means. So in that framework, just let me say this. There's a temptation to look at addiction or alcohol or drug addiction, however you want to call it, by itself. And unfortunately, in a lot of Native American communities, there's all kinds of things going on where alcohol and drugs is just one of many. And so if you look at just overall health rates, suicide, everything that's going on, I mean, this is a group that, if you're looking at reservations, they live in a third world country, and just all of these things are connected. So it's hard just to pull out one problem without looking at everything else that's going on in these communities.
So all those are contributing factors, we know, to addiction. It can be cultural, environmental, And we have in our studio a couple guests from Native American Lifelines.
Yes.
And so are there any particular issues that affect New England Native Americans that you see overall that affect the way they come into treatment or they come in for help to you guys?
Well, we have the unique experience of being an urban Indian health facility. So the populations we see are diverse tribal populations. It's not just one tribe and one community. Like other reservations, the urban population does see similar problems. Besides substance abuse, we also see lots of prominence of cancer, alcohol abuse, all different types of health rates that are affecting our urban communities.
So what is happening is that there's this group, which is how many different groups?
There are over 566 tribes,
right,
that are federally recognized. And for us that we see here in New England, there are several different tribes. The population that we tend to serve are mostly Wampanoags and Mi'kmaq. And even though we are separated by different tribal ethnicities, we do see similarities in
right.
experiences.
So there are these groups all over the country who have had, even though they've had very different cultural backgrounds, they all have had the same experience of not being part of the dominant culture, not being part of, you know, being separate and really suffering, it sounds like, health-wise and substance abuse-wise.
And is access to services diminished in the Native American community compared to other Americans?
That's one of the main issues that we're dealing with, is helping our clients get access to care. And you see often in different reservations that they're often in rural, isolated areas where a closest health facility can be several hours away. And that is a great factor affecting communities there.
So I have a question for all three of you guys. Is what are some of the myths about substance abuse among Native Americans that you want to address? Like, you know, I think there's a myth that there's a lot of alcohol abuse, that was somehow genetically predetermined, or that there's, you know, the kind of the cliched ideas of Native Americans and alcohol abuse. What are some of the myths that you guys want to explode?
David?
Yeah, so, you know, of course there's this myth of the drunken Indian, you know, and so, you know, and I guess it can be related to other cultures. Well, so, you know, the Irish sort of has their own mythology around them. And there's also, this myth that, you know, all Native Americans live on reservations. And so I think the latest stats I saw is about a third or so actually live on reservations. The highest, if New York City was a reservation, it would be the largest reservation in the United States. There's more Native Americans there than any other place in the United States. So, you know, there's just all of these sort of issues that can contribute to this myth. But it's the drunken Indian that I want to sort of attack and sort of do away with.
Do you guys have anything to offer? I mean, add to that?
I think in some sense it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy where you're constantly bombarded with these images that your people are drunken Indians. And so if you're constantly seeing this negative stereotype, it's kind of, well, am I going to amount to anything more than this stereotype? This is all that I'm going to deal with. So in that sense, we see people taking that negative aspect into themselves and becoming that stereotype.
So what are the roots of the problem? I mean, all of addiction has lots of different underlying causes. What do you, David and Janelle and Lucina, what do you see as the underlying causes?
I think for me, I see poverty leading to substance abuse and not having the money to, you know, get things that they need. It all goes down to poverty. To me, that's what I see. And working in the Native communities, the number one thing is poverty.
I see. Lucina's nodding.
Yes.
So the hopelessness attached to poverty and the inability to kind of see any escape from that contributes to the problems.
So David, you were talking about, we were talking about what are the root causes, and Lucina had also talked to, and I've read your story, so Lucina was also talking about how people kind of internalized the views that they were fed about the expectations of not being able to get anywhere. And would you be willing to share some of your story, and so that people can understand what it does to people and, you know, how they get out of it?
Sure.
So, thanks.
So, you know, I grew up in a sort of a mixed, my mom was, I was getting ready to say she was Cherokee. She is Cherokee. And my dad was Irish, so he's passed. He's crossed over. So anyway, there was these, when I would go to my mom's people's homes or a gathering, it would be a whole lot different, and actually there would be no drinking. They were basically Christians. And so when I would go to my dad's side, there was all kinds of drinking going on, and so I learned how to drink the old-fashioned way. I was coached into it.
Mm-hmm.
They taught me how to drink, how to make mixed drinks, how to get over a hangover and all those sort of things. And so eventually, after building my resume, I dropped out of high school in the 12th grade, continued to drink, got into drugs, and eventually wound up as a garbage man. And so then I got sober the old-fashioned way, too. I was forced. What I saw is, of course, I had no other choice. I was either going to lose my job or get some type of help. And so they sent me to an EAP, an Employees Assistance Program. And so they put me in treatment that day, and it sort of broke me down. You know, they didn't allow me to sort of get away with all these other excuses. The guy who ran it had been in prison 8 times, and he said, you know, you can't BS me. You know, I've been to those places. And so he just asked me, he didn't ask me if I drank alcohol, he asked me how much. And I think that's a very different question. And so it all just came out. And in some sense, I was relieved to sort of express all these things that was going on in my life. And so I went to treatment, and I've been sober ever since. That was in 1989.
Congratulations.
And so thank you. And so, you know, suicide was a part of my story. Sexual abuse, physical abuse, all of these things that sort of happen in different communities happened to me. And so, you know, I guess, you know, you physically abuse a kid, you know, sexually abuse a kid, you grow up in poverty, you know, alcohol was sort of the medicine. You know, it's like, I'm going to have all this stuff going on. And alcohol allowed me to get away from everything. And so did drugs. And what became the medicine obviously became the cancer in my life, what happens to a lot of people's lives. And so to me, I guess the important thing is, regardless if you're a native or any kind of human, you can get sober. You can get better. There are some issues culturally that should be dealt with, but the disease is no different in a African-American, a Caucasian, or a Native American. You know, that disease is the same thing.
So, but let's talk about your recovery, David. Has your cultural heritage informed your recovery at all?
Yeah, so, you know, I guess I got sober when I was 26, and so I was, you know, I'm 50 now, so I really consider that, although I'm still young.
That's young.
A lot younger than. So. And in some sense, I really didn't care much about either culture, Irish or Native American, when I was young. And, you know, I didn't listen to anybody. And it only when I started getting sober, my uncle came back into my life and started teaching me things. And, you know, so I started making this move back to our people. And so those sort of things, those sort of teachings within my family, within my people, really cocooned my thought and my behaviors, you know, because my uncle told me, you know, his father, my grandfather, had passed. And, you know, they just talked about how, you know, we remain connected and that my grandpa is always part of my life. So, you know, it's this idea I don't want to disappoint those people that mean so much to me. So I'm cursed with this idea that somebody's watching me. You know what I mean? So that sort of directs my behavior, and I think it can direct a whole lot of other folks' behavior.
So I'm wondering, we were talking in the studio before, and Lucina, you were talking, we were talking about 12-step recovery for Native Americans. There's an availability of that, and you said it's been fairly successful.
Research has shown that programs that incorporate Native culture and Native spiritual values with the 12-step program or any kind of program have been the most successful with Native clients. There's a concept called the Red Road, where you follow the Red Road and you reconnect with your heritage. You follow up to your spiritual heritage, your spiritual values, and it helps you stay sober.
So can you describe, like, what the Red Road would be for, like, say, you? I mean, not you, but people you work with.
It's unique for every individual. It's more of a general sense and not a specific sense of spirituality and just cultural practices, reconnecting with your people, the tribe, the family. It's all like being part of one big family and reconnecting with your people.
And I think also doing sweats and going to sun dances and having that spiritual practice where, you know, that can help you not get into the substance abuse and keep on the Red Road.
Yeah, participating in any kind of aspect of our culture, like social dances, powwows. There's a lot of individuals who are following the Red Road and practicing in that way.
Is there treatment available that's specific to Native American peoples?
Nodding. I see a lot of nodding.
Yes. Yes, there is.
David, does your program address, you know, the idea of being on the Red Road?
Are you talking about me individually?
No, the program. You work with programs?
Yes. So I'm an academic now. So,
oh, cool. Okay.
That whole deal. But so when I do
sorry.
Around, no, it's fine. It's around research and those sort of things. But I think when non-natives hear the word Red Road and they hear that stuff, so it would be like somebody in recovery who, you know, they work the 12 steps. They go to AA meetings. They go on 12-step calls. You know, they do things that supports their recovery in the 12-step model. And so the same thing could be sort of said about the Red Road. You know, it's so when you're a Native American, you have, in order to, you know, to support culturally, you do things what the young ladies were talking about. You know, you go to ceremonies. You do sweat lodges. You know, you do those things that ensure that you remain culturally connected. Just like they say in AA, keep coming back. You go, you know, you do all those things that remain, that keeps you remain connected to recovery. So, you know, it's just another way of what we say, sort of being on the road to recovery.
Well, one of the things that I am struck by that is that the disconnect that the American government and made sure that Native peoples had from their own culture and all that, and you know, there's so much loss and so much inability to be part of your culture. It was amazing watching other programs where they're trying to put this back. Have you guys seen that?
There's a lot of historical trauma that Native people have experienced through the boarding schools, through forced removal from the traditional lands. And that has really added to what we're seeing in our health. We're seeing a lot of abuse. And part of that, I believe, is dealing with that psychological trauma of that losing those connections. And so what interventions are focusing on is reestablishing that circle, making the circle stronger, where we're trying to revitalize our cultures. In the Northeast specifically, when there wasn't a lot of forced removal per se, but there was a loss of languages. And that is something that's going on in Northeast initiatives of finding our cultural languages. And that is a way that we can have the youth and all our people reconnect with our past.
And like what the population, the older population that I was working with, like some are so scarred from their losing their language, losing the respect that they had for our culture and not being able to get that culture back because they felt ashamed on who they were.
So when we come back, we're going to speak more to that intergenerational trauma, and we're going to talk about recovery as well. We're going to talk about some of the services available to the Native American peoples. When we went to the break, Lucina, you mentioned historical trauma. Can you talk more about that?
Historical trauma is a concept that there's intergenerational effects of events that happened in the past. So today we are still experiencing the loss that occurred with the boarding school, where children were forced by the government to attend institutions where they experienced different kinds of abuse. And from that, they lost that connection with their heritage. And since then, we're still seeing the effects of the removal and the effort to try to reconnect.
And historical, it wasn't that long ago. I mean, this is the generation before you guys. So yeah. So people were taken from their families, put in schools, taught how to be an American, and then sent home.
Yeah, the concept behind that was to kill the Indian, save the man. Yeah. And so they killed the Indian by taking the children away.
And taking the language away and taking
cutting
the culture
the hair,
away.
Cutting the hair, taking their cultural beliefs away spiritually.
So you guys in the studio, Lucina and Janelle, are both Native Americans. What's been your experience growing up? How did you experience the culture? And what have you seen in the culture that relates to substance abuse?
Well, for me growing up, I used to get like all the stereotypes. You know, I lived in a teepee I used to get the concept of, you guys are still around? I thought you guys were extinct.
Oh, that's nice.
What part of India are you from?
Oh.
So I used to get that a lot. And having it, growing up into the substance abuse, I learned to stay away and help reconnecting with my people.
And that's the same thing that I experienced. I lived in a reservation community, born and raised, and there isn't a family on our community that isn't affected by substance abuse or alcoholism. I also had to deal with defending my identity, and even though we have a reservation, we have to constantly prove who we are to everyone. And so I had to deal with protecting my identity, but also all the issues that are affecting my community.
Do you think it's different? I mean, from your experience, is different in New England than it would have been in the South or the West or something?
I feel it's pretty much the same experience. Our populations tend to be lower compared to out West, I believe. So our presence, I feel that people don't think there are natives in the Northeast, and because we are smaller tribes, tend to be from 300 to 3,000 tribal members. So I feel like we had to really defend that we are still here. This is still native land, and there's still native people in the area.
And I think people, now that this generation, they know less and less about Native Americans. And for me, I get, what ethnic background are you? I say Native American. I don't even know what's that.
Yeah.
So then I have to get back and go way back and say Columbus days, because that's how I got to get down to it so they can understand.
Mm.
Well, my experience of growing up in the Northeast was that history started in 1620. And really, really, really was, that's how I was taught. And it was just amazing to me when the lights came on that, that's not when history started.
David, what do you want the rest of America to know about your culture? In 20 seconds or less.
Just supporting what these young ladies talk about is, it's sort of, we're still around. We're still here. You know what I mean? It's not like we only show up at parades there's this whole deal about Washington Redskins now about, when there's So I wrote a paper the other day, or wrote something, and one of the reviewers said, well, you know, Native Americans are so, you know, they're sort of looked upon in honor. You know, I mean, there's this belief that in some sense they're, you know, where they're this, you know, that here in Americans have this honorable ideal of Native Americans. Well, if that was true, there wouldn't be a Washington Redskins.
Right. You know? Good point.
And so, you know, they wouldn't, you know, reservations wouldn't be in third world looking communities. I think one of the young ladies, they're Shinnecock, aren't you?
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I've been to the Shinnecock Reservation, and it's, we drove there, and it's beautiful. You drive in and big, beautiful mansions and everything, and all of a sudden you arrive on the reservation, and it's a different world. And I'm not to speak badly of the Shinnecock, but that's sort of typical of Native communities, reservations around the United States. You know when you arrive upon a Native American reservation. And there's this, unfortunately, this way that the system is they have to live upon the government. And, you know, in some sense, they still haven't become like these free people. And the way to do that, I think, is a lot of communities have developed casinos. And so, you know, I always say, people always ask me, well, how much casino money do you get? You know, I don't get casino money. You know what I mean? Like, you know, you must have all these great benefits. And that's just not the case.
Don't forget the free schooling.
Oh, so. Yeah, you go to school for free.
And we don't pay taxes, which is not true.
No.
Not true.
Well, I mean, so I think what's coming across is that most people haven't a clue about that there's a separate experience, that there therefore would be separate needs, that life is really different if you're, hi, I'm Native American.
Yeah, I think what I've constantly dealt with is that people view Native Americans as a concept of the past, that were images of the past. If you think of a Native, that's what you're going to think of automatically, is some kind of icon or imagery of a country Western or like a Western movie. You don't think of me living in my house where we're dealing with issues of poverty. That's just something that doesn't come to your mind.
Exactly. Like what Lucina was saying, we got this image of that all Native Americans supposed to look like from the 1860s, the ones on the picture. We don't look like that. We have all different types, how we look, some dark, some light skinned, and for people will say, oh, your costumes are beautiful. They're not costumes, they're regalia.
Or we deal with the negative stereotype where they think of the drunken Indian. Well, and the poverty. Yes, we do have these strong issues, but we're also a strong people. We have strong cultures that we're more than just this negative stereotype.
So how do you outreach to people? I mean, how do you outreach to people? How do you find people who need help and get them the help they need?
We just go into the community. We are part of the community. We participate. We just connect with people face to face, and just making that connection, which is all part of our culture, connecting with one another. That's how we go and reach out to people and make ourselves present.
So the average client that comes to you, what are the top three needs that they have when they come in?
Housing, food, health insurance.
So real basic.
Mm-hmm.
Real basic stuff. And what kind of help do you give them?
For me, when they come in for health insurance, I help them sign up. Housing, I will sit down and do the housing application with them. And for food, I'll refer them to the nearest food banks.
Will they come to you guys for substance abuse help?
Yes.
Yes.
Are you guys the point of first, you know, the first point of entry into the system for a lot of folks?
Yes, when the clients come in, the first person they see is me. I do the intake and I take their tribal IDs so we can help them to get the services that they need.
And is there a decent availability of services, or is there need for more?
I think for Massachusetts, there's need for more, and there's, like, compared to New Hampshire where they have no services. I have clients that come down from New Hampshire and say, where's your nearest Indian Health Services, or which I need a referral. They'll make that 3-hour drive to come to Boston mm-hmm. to get the services that they need.
So, David, you do research. Can you? I know this is your life work. So, can you talk to us a little about some of the research you've found and some of the research you're doing, some of the things you've found?
Yeah. So, so right now I was involved with the folks at the University of Buffalo just did a big survey with gaming and alcohol and drug use, and there was this hypothesis that, you know, more traditional Native Americans, which means, you know what I mean, they're connected to their culture, they go to ceremonies, all these sort of things. And let me just say, there not only is there a high rate of alcohol and drugs for Native Americans, there's also a high rate of abstainers. And so there's this huge paradox between, you know, everybody thinks that Native Americans just drink, but no, there's communities out there that totally abstain from everything, and so and they're more, I would think, traditional people. But anyway, we thought that there would be a protective factor for those folks who were really traditional, into their culture, could speak the language, went to ceremonies, go to powwows, all these sort of things. And I kind of found out those things really didn't have a relationship with gaming or alcohol and drugs. And it seems like the more traditional that folks said they were, the higher gaming that they were involved in. And so in some sense, in many reservations, really the biggest business on reservation are casinos. So right. In order to get away from the federal government, why not support what supports you? And so that may be part of the issue, I think, going on is this high gaming on reservations. But I also look at also retention into schools. And I think the young ladies talk about boarding schools and the complication of education. Native Americans also have a very high rate of dropout, both in high school and in college. And so what I try to do is intervene on underrepresented minorities to keep them in the educational process. For me, education saved my life. It improved my life. It made my life better. It made my kids' life better. And so I think any way to try to keep kids in school hopefully will keep them away from alcohol and drugs.
So we're going to talk more about this when we come back. We're going to take a break. But it's interesting that when you lift up something and say, oh, here's a problem here, you lift it up further and there's a whole slew of issues and there's a whole slew of solutions as well. So when we come back, we're going to talk about the solutions a little bit.
Right before the break.
David said that the thing about people dropping out, and during the break we asked Lucina why she thought that was. And you had a great... So why do you think that there's that problem?
As a Native youth going to college, it's your first experience, and you're... As a Native person, you're walking between two worlds where you're connected to your traditional community and the modern world. And so leaving the reservation or leaving your own community can be a traumatic experience where you feel lost to begin with. But then in addition to that, you're lost. You lose your connection to your Native community. So it's important to have these services, Native services or cultural services, where you can reconnect and have a community space. That's why we have Native American Lifelines in Boston for the urban population to make that connection again with their communities.
Janelle, was that, what was your experience?
Well, my experience growing up, I was born in the city of Boston all my life. I didn't live on the reservation, so I didn't have that reservation life. I didn't have that experience growing up. But during my experience having the urban center and going to the center in Boston, where we all connected, and I felt like I was connected to a different agency where all the other Native Americans went, and I felt more comfortable. And school, I didn't have that dropout rate, high school. So staying connected with my Native American community.
So two different stories from you guys, you know, and David, what was your experience? I know you talked about growing up where you grew up, but was there any, was your Native American identity, did it play into your growing up and then you know, being in school? How was that reflected in your youth?
Yeah, so, you know, I try to avoid any type of visual thing on me. You know what I mean? It's like, and even I have two boys now. They just want to go to school. They want to be left alone, and they don't want to be the brunt of anybody's jokes. And so, you know, I would get things like Crazy Horse Chief, you know, that kind of stuff, and you know, sort of just try to blow that off. But what one of the young ladies said was, these two worlds are not feeling connection. So I've asked successful people what they've done if they've graduated, what was the main reason why they stayed in school and were successful, and pretty much the top answer is somebody supported me, somebody believed in me. You know, it wasn't intelligence, it wasn't GPA, it wasn't all those other kind of things. It was they had some support somewhere, and so so people in recovery sort of would probably say the same thing. They're supported. You know what I mean? They're around other people who are struggling with the same things. They feel connected. And in any sort of situation like that, people can succeed. And I think when Natives get around in a group of other supportive Natives, they can do anything that they can put their mind to.
I think, and that you said it beautifully, and thank you for joining us, David.
Yeah, David, you can follow Dr. Patterson's blog, Native American Commitment to Wellness and Respect, at nacwr.blogspot.com. Thank you so much, Dr. Patterson.
Thank you.
You guys left in the studio, Lucina and Janelle. Is there any message that you want to get out about the services that you provide at Native Lifelines?
We want people to know that we are here in the community. We do have a presence in Boston. We have cultural classes every week.
Talking circles.
And talking circle, where we talk about wellness. And that is in a collaboration with the Harvard School of Public Health. We are here to offer support services, referral. We have
case management.
We have a weekly support group for substance abuse that is open to any Native needing help.
On Monday nights.
Where are you guys located?
We're located at 2077 Center Street in West Roxbury.
So, you know, my esteemed colleague, Abby Dean, talks about the things that work in treatment. And you always talk about how people have to find their people and how they have to find their tribe, and that's what builds that strength in recovery for people. And this seems like one of those, like the perfect thing. You're literally kind of finding your people and rebuilding that cohesion through the strength of the Native American community. NativeLifelines.org is the way to get in touch with this program. And it's we want to thank Lucina Anko and Janelle Pukawachit. They're both from Native American Lifelines Boston. And thank you so much for being here today, you guys.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
So what'd you learn?
I learned a lot. Thanks, John. What did I learn? So the teachers are sitting in front of us still. Yeah. So I think, you know, the idea of people always say, well, I went to one NA meeting or I went to a treatment program and I didn't like the people there, so I didn't get better, kind of thing. And that's when I say find your people. You know, go to a few different meetings, maybe a different treatment program, and maybe it's connecting with your culture. Maybe it's that you're going to do better if you are finding other people who have lived two lives, you know, the white life and the other life. And, you know, I think finding where you're comfortable and you can get better.
Well, that's why Right Turn was created by you and Woody, to to really have that connection to community and the people that, you know, share similar experience. And it works. It's just a greater cohesion of people and a greater success rate in treatment. It's a cool topic. It's an interesting topic. I learned something. I am frustrated by what this population has had to go through. It seems we were talking about, you know, like institutionalized poverty and just, you know, a really strong community that's been kind of dealt a horrible hand in history. But they're working really hard, and all these folks that we talked to tonight are working really hard to help a lot of the people.
Well, it's really interesting because my kids are learning different history than I learned.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. And I think that it makes it so that there's hope.
Thank you for listening to the Right Turn Radio podcast. Please check us out on Facebook and at www.right-turn.org.